This week's episode of The Dive is brought to you by Pelican Brewing. For nearly 30 years, Pelican Brewing has crafted the most balanced tasting brews. Now, they're bringing the same satisfying taste to hop-infused sparkling water with zero alcohol and zero calories. Sparkle Hops is a hop and fruit-infused new way to elevate your everyday. Expertly brewed from hops in two flavors, Citra hop-infused sparkling water with lemon and Strata hop-infused sparkling water with acai. Start with a sip and breeze away with the balance of quality hops, ripe fruit, and punchy fizz. Refreshment, it's a Pelican thing. Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show. In Oregon, a state heralded for its recreational outdoor lifestyle, a state that loves mountain climbing and biking and hiking, there is a chronic shortage of rehab beds for patients with brain injuries. How? And despite the intersection of untreated brain trauma and our crisis of untreated mental illness and houselessness, powerful interests in Oregon's healthcare industry don't want more rehab beds. Why? It's Saturday, January 21st, and this is episode 107 of The Dive. Today, Nigel Jaquess and I are talking about his cover story, Free Fall, the story of Dave Nicholson's experience navigating traumatic brain injury rehab in Oregon. Nigel will also untangle the causes and effects of Oregon's dearth of brain trauma rehab beds, and he'll explain why Oregon lags behind other states, and he'll introduce us to who's doing what to fix the problem. We'll get into all that in one sec, but first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Tina Kotek came into office hot, declaring a state of emergency and earmarking $130 million in funds to alleviate homelessness. The catch? The order only covers 11 counties, omitting 25 rural counties. Reps for Oregon's Coastal Caucus sent a letter of protest urging Kotek to extend her concern beyond urban areas. Lucas Manfield reports on City Hall's new safety plan. Holiday lights. Holiday light displays all year round. I love this. I support this. I love this. Do my neighborhood next, please. Sophie Peel reports on the piping hot tea spilled January 10th when Sam Adams resigned from his position in City Hall, citing his anemia as the cause. But then, hours after that email was sent, Mayor Wheeler told Willamette Week that Adams was trying to save face and he was actually asked to resign because of his pattern of bullying and intimidating female employees. Let's wrap news on a good note. Michelle Kutcherer reports on an organization called New Narrative, and it's an org that helps young adults who are aging out of the foster system. It helps with housing, life goals, and skills, and it also features a mentorship wing that helps participants express themselves through music and art. Now let's talk with Nigel Jaquess about his cover story, Free Fall.
You know, if you're a family member of somebody who has suffered a brain injury or another traumatic injury, you would want your family member to get the highest level of care.
Sure.
It's simply not available. So in the case of Dave Nichols, who's the young man that is sort of the lead character in this week's story, when his parents were told, okay, at Harborview in Seattle, we've done all we can do for Dave. It's time to get him out of here. And often I should add, there's a lot of pressure to free up the bed. I've heard from readers since this story published about their family members who are essentially being pushed out of acute care hospitals and there's nowhere for them to go. So the Nichols said, okay, well, we live in Portland. We'd like to bring our son home to Portland, but there were no beds available, none. No rehab beds available, again, because Oregon has a very small number of rehab beds. So they spent $19,000 to fly him to Colorado to a standalone rehab facility called Craig Hospital in Englewood, Colorado. Now, that was really expensive, obviously, but they you know, they wanted to do whatever they could to get Dave on the path to rehab. He stayed in Colorado for almost 6 months, getting first inpatient and then outpatient therapy, and then he came home in 2018. So again, the alternative would be if he were to come back to Oregon, he would have had to have gone to a skilled nursing facility, which would have a much lower level of care, and that would reduce his chance of regaining normal functions and regaining the life that he was leading when his accident occurred.
Why? What's the reason for the lack of these beds?
Well, that's a second major component of this story. In Oregon and in 35 states, there's what's called a certificate of need process. It's a law that Oregon passed in 1971. Other states passed similar laws around the same time. The goal was good. The idea was that instead of having five hospitals in the same community doing the same kind of work and resulting in an overinvestment of very expensive facilities, anytime you want to open a new hospital or a new major medical facility in Oregon, you have to go to the state and say, we'd like to open this new hospital, and here's why it's needed. And essentially, you have to prove the case that this new investment is worthwhile and not a waste of taxpayer money or not a diversion of resources from other needed investments. But what's happened over the past 50 years is it's become kind of a gatekeeping operation mm-hmm. for people who already are in a certain business. So in 2018, right after Dave Nichols came home from Colorado, two hospital chains from the East Coast, one from Pennsylvania, one from Alabama, filed applications with the state of Oregon. They said, look, you guys don't have enough rehab beds. We're in that business. We're in that business all over the country. We'd like to come and open. They applied to open one in Tigard and one in Hillsboro, 50 beds each. And the state said, yeah, we looked at your math. You're correct. We need the beds. Go ahead. But Legacy Hospital, which has the largest existing facility in Northwest Portland, and the Oregon Healthcare Association, which represents the skilled nursing facilities, they both stood to lose. They both are the existing big players in that space, and they said, no, we don't think the beds are necessary. We think the market is just fine. So they went round and round. It's been now nearly 5 years. Ultimately, last year in May, the state said after a four-year process, which is just as contentious as a major court proceeding, the state said, yes, Oregon needs these beds. Go ahead. And as soon as they did, then Legacy and the Healthcare Association, as is their right, filed a lawsuit in the Oregon Court of Appeals to block these facilities. Now, the Oregon Court of Appeals has a massive backlog of cases. We probably won't know what the court thinks about this situation until late next year or even perhaps longer. So the long-winded answer to your question is that there is a very effective gatekeeping process that stops new rehab beds from opening.
Is there an epidemic of untreated brain injuries in Oregon? And how does this issue intersect with the homelessness crisis, with the mental health crisis that we see on the streets today?
There is a lot of research, and a lot of it is very new, that finds that untreated brain injuries, often undiagnosed and untreated brain injuries, correlate highly to homelessness. So there was a new study done in Colorado just last year, late last year, for instance, that found that of the people they surveyed on the streets of Denver and a second Colorado city, that about 74% of them had traumatic brain injuries prior to becoming homeless.
Whoa.
There are other studies that show very high correlations between traumatic brain injuries and substance use disorder, because people who have suffered brain injuries often struggle with executive function and with decision making, with impulse control, and they often feel a need for medication, and many of them are outside of the medical system, so they medicate themselves. A third area that is very troubling is that there is a very high correlation between traumatic brain injury and incarceration. So there are a number of studies. One that really caught my eye, and Dave Kracke, who's the sort of leading advocate for people who suffered brain injuries in Oregon, he's a lawyer who's done a lot of work in this area and passed some important legislation in this area, told me about a study and shared it with me that showed that in one case, 70% of women who were incarcerated were found to have had pre-existing traumatic brain injuries. So
Whoa. There's
always I'm not a statistician, I'm not a medical person, there's always a great deal of room for error when journalists discuss causation and correlation. So I want to be clear that I'm not saying these are necessarily entirely causal. I am saying that researchers have found in each of those three key areas, homelessness, substance use disorder, and incarceration, that a lot of people who are afflicted with those three things have pre-existing traumatic brain injuries. So what experts say is that often people's brain injuries aren't properly diagnosed. So they know something's wrong with them, they don't know what it is. Secondly, a lot of times they don't get the treatment they need, or they don't get it in time. So, you know, you have a big loss of function and you never get it back. And that has all kinds of implications for what happens to you in the future.
Yeah. So Dave Kracke, he's the state's first brain injury advocate, coordinator, brain injury advocate coordinator. So he worked to prepare legislation that would streamline access to the supports that are needed by people who have suffered from traumatic brain injuries. But I'm wondering, what good is this work that he's doing if those supports don't exist in the state?
Well, so there are all kinds of supports that we're talking about here. One of the things that Kracke's group did prior to proposing this legislation was to survey a lot of families about what the system is like for them now and what their needs are. And one of the things they found is that the average person with a traumatic brain injury needs about 12 different kinds of support. And those can range from, you know, cognitive therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, but also include things like legal resources, financial counseling, transportation. There are just a lot of different areas in which people who suffer traumatic brain injuries need assistance. And in many cases, there is assistance available. There's either money or medical treatment or connections to services. And what Oregon has fallen in a dark hole on is trying to have those systems and services and supports be coordinated or to be accessible. Because, you know, if you think about it, if you've lost function or your family member has lost function, there's usually big financial consequences to that. And then, you know, you've got services that are scattered all over the state and all over the metro area. And you're like, how on earth can I possibly access all these if I don't know what's available? And then I have to go to 12 different places to get them. So the bill that Kracke has proposed this session is to do what 39 other states have already done, and that's to have a centralized office where you can go. I've suffered a traumatic brain injury. I go to an office in the Department of Human Services or the Oregon Health Authority, and they say, okay, we can connect you to all these services in one shot, and here's everything that's available to you. Here's how you can get it, and we're going to help you get it. We'll be your advocate. It's what they're going to call a brain injury navigation center or navigation service. And I mean, it sounds so commonsensical that it's remarkable we don't already have it. But you know, there are, even in the state government, there are several different major agencies that one, if one had a brain injury, would have to be in touch with or could conceivably be in touch with, because they have resources available, but they don't talk to each other. The services are siloed. And so the intention behind this bill is simply to take what we already have and actually make it much more useful and functional for families.
I see. What was the most challenging part of putting the story together?
I think that the complexity of the challenge that a family faces when a loved one has a brain injury or spinal cord injury or has suffered from a stroke, just trying to make that something that the average reader who doesn't have any of those issues can follow, and to try and connect a personal story like the one that the Nichols family are living to this institutional mishmash of jargon, acronyms, and dysfunctional government policy and agency is a challenge, because in order to understand why the system is so broken and unhelpful to families like the Nichols, you have to kind of unpack that system. And unfortunately, what I found, and I think what the Nichols and all these other families that are in this position have found, is it's very complicated. It's really complicated. I think it's a classic case of, the intersection of the medical industry, which doesn't actually function like a market, but needs to function a little bit more like a market, and these massive layers of government regulation, the incredibly complex way in which we fund medical services, which can be private pay, which can be Medicare, which can be Medicaid, which can be a combination of all the above. And I don't think that Legacy or the Healthcare Association are evil. I think they're rational players trying to exist in an irrational system. And so, when you take all that and you look at it in your notebook and you say, how on earth am I ever going to explain this to somebody who doesn't have a reason to have to read it, it's a little bit of a challenge. It was a challenge.
Yeah. Big thanks to this week's guest, Nigel Jaquess, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, bye! Thank you.